The Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution makes it clear any citizen accused of a crime will, if necessary, have access to qualified legal representation in court. Yet for years in Michigan, many have said this access has been inconsistent at best and woefully inadequate at worst. Finally, after decades of failed efforts to reform the system, both the state Senate and House sent bipartisan bills on Wednesday to Governor Snyder's desk that would offer some concrete changes. Joining us to help sort out what these bills will mean for Michigan's indigent defense system is Tom Boyd, Chief Judge for the 55th District Court here in Ingham County, who has been an advocate for reform. Welcome back to the program, Judge Boyd.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be back.
We spoke at length about this when you were on Current State back in early May, but for listeners who are new to the issue, can you first tell us how Michigan's public defender system has worked for the past few decades?
Really, since the Constitution was passed in 1963, Michigan has had not had one system, it's had many systems. Each individual county, each individual circuit, each individual district has its own way of providing legal representation for those who cannot afford it. And it's led to sort of this patchwork quilt. Some programs operate well and others don't. On a national standard, the American Bar Association has developed 10 principles to guide a system for providing indigent defense. There's not one system in Michigan that meets all 10 principles. Mm. So what we have is, while we have well-meaning people working hard in a dysfunctional system, we don't have the systemic safeguards in place to assure that each individual defendant receives the effective assistance of counsel that the Constitution calls for.
As a supporter of reform, in your view, how bad is it? I mean, last time you told some pretty eye-opening accounts.
Well, just to remind your listeners a couple of those, we have a situation where today, in the vast majority, almost all circuits, it's the judge presiding over the case, or the judges of that circuit, who decide which lawyers get to work, which lawyers get to have the cases, which creates a conflict of interest in the lawyer's mind between the zealous representation and effective representation required by the Constitution and not wanting to anger the court and potentially lose their contract. Sometimes zealous representation requires being aggressive and filing motions that might clog up the court's docket. And today that conflict results in probably not zealous representation, which is required by the canons and the Constitution, the rules and the Constitution. So we need to get rid of that conflict. For example, I was at a meeting over a year ago with a number of judges in a specific county talking about indigent defense and emphasizing that one of the things we need to do is to separate the appointment process from the judges themselves. And one of the judges in the room said to me, well, wait a minute, if I don't get to appoint my lawyers, how will I fund my campaign? Mm. So we've deteriorated to the point where we really have sort of a corrupt system that people are trapped in, and we need to free them so that the system has safeguards for the defendants rather than fundraising opportunities for elected officials.
I guess so. So two bills will combine to launch a process here aimed at reforming this system. Can you tell us what these bills will actually do?
Sure, and I love the word launch, because this is really not the end of a debate. It's the beginning.
The legislature and the governor will have to weigh in here. We're talking about legislation to make these changes possible.
It's true. Right? The legislature, the bills you mentioned, will create a permanent commission. And this commission will search the country, the world, and find what are the minimum standards for a system to provide effective assistance to counsel. And those standards will be adopted by this commission after public hearings. They'll be sent to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will validate those principles, those standards, and then each community will be asked how they plan to implement the standards within their community. Michigan is a very unique beast, because in so many things, whether it's school districts or police departments, local control is a fundamental principle in Michigan governance. So what this bill does is preserve local control while mandating minimum state standards.
I see. There was little resistance to these forms in these legislative votes this week, but it wasn't unanimous either. Do you know where resistance is coming from and how that resistance is being justified? Is this a cost issue or what?
I think there's a variety of things. First, I think that's an excellent opportunity for me to identify the individuals who made this happen. I think that Governor Snyder deserves a lot of credit for bringing this issue back to the forefront and pushing this legislation through. Representative Tom McMillan, Senator Bruce Caswell, these are the individuals who championed these bills through the legislative process. There are a handful of legislators and certainly some people who are going to tell you that the costs is something they're concerned about. I read in the State Journal yesterday that the number $50 million was thrown out there as a potential long-term cost annually of providing effective assistance to people accused of crime who can't otherwise afford a lawyer. And what we have to do is we have to keep these things in perspective. If we think about $50 million, which is a tremendous amount of money, no doubt about that. Well, 15 years ago, when I lobbied for the Department of Attorney General Frank Kelly, $50 million was the amount of money that the Department of Corrections lapsed each year. Lapsed means the residuals in each of their accounts, when you add them all up at the end of the year, that was over $50 million. Mm. So in terms of relative scale, $50 million and what we're spending in corrections is money we ought to move to avoiding jailing people who don't need to be jailed. A perfect example is one of the stories I told you last time I was here was about the United States Supreme Court case named Lafler versus Cooper. That's a Detroit case. And the Supreme Court decided that that case needed to be reversed because the trial counsel was ineffective. This is the case where the lawyer told the defendant not to plead guilty to a lesser charge because you couldn't be convicted of attempted murder if you only shot someone below the waist.
Right.
Which, of course, is a preposterous thing to say. Really ineffective assistance counsel, the Supreme Court said that. If you look at that case and just look at the dollars, the difference in the amount of money that that gentleman would have cost us, the taxpayers, for being wrongfully incarcerated, as determined by the United States Supreme Court. Mm. If he stayed his minimum time in jail, we would have spent $374,000 more than we should have. Mm. If he reached his maximum sentence, on this one individual, we would have spent $748,000 more than we should have. That's one defendant out of tens of thousands of cases per year. So if we have a handful of guys like this that we can put in jail for the right amount of time that the system and the law determines is the appropriate for their crime, we may be saving $750,000 a year per inmate.
How interesting.
So how do you measure what it's – first of all, we don't know what it's going to cost yet. But you have to balance off the
cost. You have to factor instances like that into the landscape.
And when we have a system with no procedural safeguards, there's just no way to tell how many defendants like this are out there costing us, $748,000for no reason at all.
Yeah. Do you view this as a good start? How encouraged were you by the passage of these measures?
Yeah, I'm very encouraged. I mean, it's not perfect. I think Senator Bruce Caswell has said a number of times that you've got legislation right when no one loves it. And I don't love it, but it's a very good start. I've likened it to if you're on a cruise liner and you're going the wrong direction for 50 years, it's hard to turn a big boat. And that's what this bill does, is it turns the boat around and we're now headed back. But we've got 50 years to head back. So this is not going to be an overnight solution. It's going to be a long process where people of goodwill will have to establish standards and find ways to pay for them. Local communities will be allowed to implement those standards pursuant to local needs and desires. Some communities will do what Muskegon County did recently, and that's open a public defender's office. Some communities will continue contract systems with private lawyers providing this service. But each local community will be able to make those decisions based upon a minimum statewide standard as determined by this commission and accepted by the Michigan State Supreme Court.
If the kinds of reforms suggested by this issue actually take shape, how would that impact the operations in your courtroom? Is there a way that you feel justice would unfold differently than it is now?
Sure. I think there's some changes that are predictable, and I can tell you today, and there's some changes that I can only guess at. The predictable changes are judges will be out of the attorney-picking business. I, as a judge, don't have any right to pick who the prosecutor sends to court to prosecute a case. There's no reason for me to have any more right to pick who the defense sends to court. And that, I think, will be something that happens relatively quickly, which means within the next few years. I suspect that this new commission will have a standard that takes judges out of the lawyer-picking business. That's what leads to the corruption, and that needs to end soon.
These ABA 10 principles that you've alluded to a number of times, does that do that? That takes the judges out of the equation?
Principle number one is independence from the judiciary in the ABA's 10 principles.
Yeah.
And your listeners can easily Google ABA 10 principles, and the first site that Google will bring you to is an annotated version of those principles. Number one is independence from the judiciary.
Is there another one that really rises to the top for you? Let's say, what would you put in second in terms of importance?
You know, it's arguable, but for me, I think that to have your lawyer adequately trained and prepared to handle the case is a very important one. Some of the systems, even some of the well-run systems in Michigan today, will allow a lawyer just out of law school to work on a felony case, even a felony case where life in prison is one of the possible outcomes.
Wow.
That's just not right. You know, being a lawyer is a lot like any other trade or profession. When you walk out of training or out of school, you're really not ready to handle the most complicated things or the things with the highest stakes. And that needs to end. We need to have people who are adequately prepared to handle the case that they're assigned to handle. We also need to have a statewide understanding of what it means to be needy of an indigent counsel. Some of the reports I've seen describe this as, lawyers for the poorest of the poor. Well, that's just not really true. Over 80% of the defendants in the criminal justice system in the United States are represented by appointed counsel. And what the constitutional standard is if you can't afford a lawyer for the charge you face. So if a man or woman who has a good job, works locally at General Motors, is all of a sudden facing a very complicated charge, they probably can't afford a lawyer to respond to that charge. If they're accused of shoplifting, well, they probably can't afford a lawyer to respond to a shoplifting charge. It's just not that complicated.
How do you, as a central participant in the legal process here in Ingham County, make your views known to the participants in this discussion? Who do you share these views with?
Well, I originally came to this issue as a representative of the Michigan District Judges Association. The associations, again, like many professions, are the spokespeople for individual groups or individual interests. And so the Michigan District Judges Association articulates the point of view from the district judge's perspective. And over 3.5 years ago, I think, I was dispatched from that association to begin to work on the issue of indigent defense. And since then, I've been honored to be selected by Governor Snyder to serve on his Indigent Defense Advisory Commission. And continue to work on this issue with Representative McMillan, Senator Caswell, and Governor Snyder through the last 6 or 8 months. So, you know, it's because of my work with our statewide association that I've been able to begin to become educated and get involved and hopefully make a difference on this issue.
It's been great catching up with you on this one. We'll continue to watch it. I'm sure you'll continue to watch it as well. Tom Boyd is the Chief Judge of the 55th District Court based here in Ingham County. Thank you, Judge Boyd, for discussing Michigan's indigent defense system with us today.
Thank you for highlighting this important issue.